Mr. President, another student asks, Iranian women are now denied basic human rights and your government has imposed draconian punishments, including execution, on Iranian citizens who are homosexuals. Why are you doing those things?
مطلقا ما در ایران اولا همجنس باز مثل کشور شما نداریم.
We don't have homosexuals like in your country.
در کشور ما چنین چیزی وجود نداره.
We don't have that in our country.
در ایران این چیزا وجود در ایران
in Iran,
چیزی اصلا وجود خارجی نداره.
We do not have this phenomenon. I don't know who's told you that we have it.
Since President Ahmadinejad made those comments in a speech at Columbia University in 2007, nearly everyone in this country has heard them or heard about them. But we've heard much less about what life is really like for Iranian lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people who do, of course, exist. In our first segment, Samin Yahagi talks with Professor of General Women's Studies, Seema Shahrazari, about the historical and current realities for Iranian queers.
In May 2010, I participated at a conference in UC Davis called Queer Privates. Dr. Seema Shahrazari was one of the speakers that struck my attention for her special outlook on queers in Iran. Seema Shahrazari is a PhD in cultural anthropology and is in her way to Houston for her postdoctorate and teaching position at University of Houston in Texas. She's currently teaching at Ethnic and Women's Studies at UC Berkeley for this summer. I asked her to give us a brief historical view of homosexuality in Iran.
Well, homosexuality as an act, if you think about it as an act, of course, has existed in Iran. You can find traces of it in poetry. You can find traces of homoerotic poetry. Whether there is or was basically an identity, homosexual identity, that is questionable. So there have been attempts by some Iranian queer groups or writers who have argued that there were homosexuals in Iran in, say, 7th century or so on and so forth. But I think that is a little bit inaccurate because perhaps the act is something that existed. But to excavate this kind of homosexual identity forgets the fact that sexuality has its own history and identities are not just transhistorical, but they're produced according to discourses and practices of their time. The turn of basically century, the way that in Iran anxieties around sexuality in contact with the West and when Orientalists and colonizers would come to Iran and observe sexual acts and consider same-sex sexual acts, homosexuality, and consider it to be backward and savage, that basically shifted the discourse on sexuality in Iran in a sense that in order to be modern, certain Iranian elites erased the history of homosexuality in Iran and kind of created this heteronormative Iranian culture where now if you talk to an average Iranian, they would consider homosexuality to be non-Iranian because, you know, the history of it is practically erased.
So talk about how the revolution 1979 touched the life condition of homosexuals.
Of course, in terms of the laws after the 1979 revolution, the Iranian criminal law basically was developed in a way that there are very harsh punishments for homosexuality in Iran. But the way that it has been written is very specifically about the act, about lavat or mosahere. Lavat is basically male penetration, and mosahere is sexual rubbing between two women. And, of course, for men, it's I think these are very much publicized when you talk about homosexuality in Iran, that for men, it's death penalty. For women, is whipping or lashes. But the way that the law has been written, you need to have four adult witnesses to come and testify. And also, you can repent in some cases, and you will be pardoned. But the way that it has been portrayed outside of Iran, and the focus on the Sharia law, takes for granted that, well, the law doesn't just like anywhere else in the world. You know, here in the U.S., you may have laws that are not executed. Now, the condition of Iranian queers after the revolution, of course, you know, before the revolution, there were even reports of gay marriages in Iran in the 70s. I think one case in the city of Shiraz. After the revolution, as long as you're not insisting on being out or confessing to your homosexuality, many people have been living their lives. You know, can they be out? No. Can they be, if they're out, will they be executed? Yes. But is the government, is the Iranian state actively going after Iranian queers? I don't think that's really the case, but that is how it has been represented in international media.
So you mentioned that there was a case of marriage in Shiraz
Yes.
before revolution.
Yes, two gay men. Although I think even during the Pahlavi era, they changed basically the definition of marriage to being between a woman and a man later. But I believe that there was a gay marriage that happened in Shiraz.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk about daily life of homosexuals in Iran?
There are times that people basically turn a blind eye, your family, the way that my family did. I think they knew, they all knew about my sexuality, and it didn't become an issue until I came to the U.S. and it became kind of institutionalized when I got married to another woman, of course, not legally. It was a symbolic wedding many, many years ago, and the news made it to Iran. That is when it becomes a problem, when other people know, you know, people, what people say is an issue. I think, you know, realistically, the Iranian state is more concerned about barandazi, which means regime change. If you're out to, you know, basically overthrow the Iranian state, then, of course, they'll come after you. But they don't consider Iranian queers to be a threat in that sense, right? So they don't actively go after people the way it has been represented here. But, of course, if you are outed as a queer by someone, you may be arrested, questioned, or be harassed. The term that is used often in the mainstream Iranian culture is hamjinsbaz, which literally means one who plays with her or his own sex. But the term is very gendered in the sense that when you say hamjinsbaz, what comes to mind is two men. Right. And it has a derogatory connotation to it. Some people consider it to be a Western disease, and they consider people who are queer to be West toxified. Not everyone, of course, within the Iranian culture thinks the same way. It would be problematic to think of Iranian culture as this coherent entity. And I mean, Iran is also the place that subsidizes sex change surgeries. So after Thailand, it is supposed to be, Tehran is supposed to be the capital of sex change surgery. Now, does that mean that Iranian transsexuals or transgender people are immune from transphobia or societal attitudes? No. I mean, a lot of people may be ostracized by their family, and they may not have an easy time, you know, if you don't have enough money, even though the Iranian state, for example, issues birth certificates with your new gender. And they, in some cases, they even give seed money for business. And the surgery, of course, is subsidized, but it's very expensive. So it's, you still need to have enough money to pay for the rest of it yourself. In fact, I think my own experience was that when I was in Iran as a teenager, as someone who was more masculine in my appearance, I didn't really experience the kind of homophobia from people around me than I did when I came to the U.S. because you basically stick out, you know, you're differentiated as gay or lesbian, right? When I lived in Iran, I didn't see the need to come out as a lesbian or as a queer person. I don't know what would be the closest way of describing it. Maybe don't ask, don't tell. Things have changed, of course, since I've left 20 years ago, because because of the internet and satellite television. There are people who, of course, identify as gay and lesbian. Now, does that mean that they're brainwashed or that they're translating the terms or identities that have a history in the U.S. or in the West? I don't think that's the case. You know, it may be the case for some people, but I think it is also one way of looking at it, as Tom Bolstro, for example, says in the case of Indonesia, is cultural dubbing, that you use these terms. Of course, the terms or identities in their particular way were created.
You being a woman who was attracted to the same sex in Iran, living that life in Iran, you had any problem in terms of how your society perceived and respond to that?
Right. Like I said, because my foremost concern wasn't being out as a lesbian, I basically found places to have relationships with women. And but of course, if you want to live as an out lesbian, it won't be easy. I mean, that's the case in many places in the U.S. too. If you live places outside of San Francisco, even in San Francisco, if you live as out couples, you may be subjected to all sorts of violence. So it's not particular to Iran. For me, as kind of what would be labeled as a butch queer in my teenage years, I think actually wearing hijab veil was, in a sense, protecting me, because I had very short hair, and having the hijab on would give me access to public places that otherwise would be denied to me, or I would be basically pointed at. People would point fingers if you walk with such short haircut or the kind of clothing, the masculine clothing that I would wear at the time. If you want to live in Iran and don't have the intention of leaving Iran, but like many people who basically have to abide to the rules, you basically may have to perform certain forms of conventions and at the same time live your queer life without announcing it to the world.
This is Women's Magazine on listener-sponsored KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. We're listening to Samin Yahagi with Dr. Seema Shahrazari, Professor of General Women's Studies, about the situation of LGBT people in Iran.
So let's talk about Iranians in diaspora. How do Iranians in diaspora relate to or act toward Iranian homosexuals?
Right. Well, again, not everyone has the same attitude or same encounter with Iranian queers. And again, Iranian queers are not this coherent entity. They're not homogenous. You know, they have many different ways of identification or many different political positions. The trend that I have observed is that during the war on terror, there has been basically this hyper-visibility of Iranian queers in not just international mainstream media, but Iranian opposition groups. And when I say opposition groups, it's opposition to the Iranian state. And the same opposition groups were actually very much homophobic in the past. And it has there has been a shift in their attitudes towards queers, this form of, in a sense, tolerance or even advocacy for queers, where queers become hyper-visible. And it's very questionable, where certain opposition activists would deny inclusion would deny participation to queers in their forums, now have all of a sudden become very queer friendly, or not just queer friendly, but they basically use the queer cause for their political agenda. And it seems to me that there is this is, in a way, the appropriation of queers by, like I said, certain opposition groups in diaspora. And when you put it in the larger context of war on terror and the way that women and queers become representable and are used as excuses for neocolonial and empire-building projects, it makes one step back for a second and question, why is that? Why now? And when you put it together with cases where, like I said, within the context of war on terror, where liberal democracies are seen as this cradle for queers, as the haven, safe haven for queers, and they're juxtaposed to places such as Iran as a home of oppression of queers and women, then it makes you think whether if there is a regime change in Iran, and that would be basically the agenda of many of these opposition groups, if queers would still be so hot on the agenda of these political groups. And I doubt that that is the case. And if you notice, actually, the question that was asked from Ahmadinejad in 2007 at Columbia University, or the question was again asked from President Khatami in 2006 when he came to Harvard University, the question about the condition of homosexuals in Iran keeps coming up. And that is often coupled with questions about Ahmadinejad's statement about Israel. And it seems to me that there is this kind of complicity between the pinkwashing of Israel mm-hmm. and the way that Iranian queers are used within this agenda. So it's a fine line to be critical of the way that Iranian queers are being appropriated by these agendas, and at the same time question or try to change the laws in Iran. And that is something that I think, at least with Iranian women's movement, what people have been trying to do during this past 30 years of changing laws. And I think that may be possible with regards to queers, or even if the laws are not changed, because according to Sharia law, it's a sin, at least not bringing it to discourse. I noticed that recently they have changed the laws so that kissing of women have been added to laws that are punishable. And this, I think, is the direct result of bringing it into discourse by international human rights groups and international gay and lesbian groups, and using Iranian queers into the regime change agendas, so that this hypervisibility exposes them to state violence even more. So I think it's a really complex issue. It's not as easy as talking about human rights for this universal, iconic gay and lesbian identity. But one needs to be very careful in terms of thinking, what are the risks of doing advocacy work, and what kind of political agendas one is becoming complicit with in doing this kind of advocacy work? And I think in terms of Iranian diasporic opposition groups, there hasn't been much responsibility towards Iranian queers who live in Iran.
How does the media in diaspora portray homosexuals in Iran?
Again, like I said, just recently, all of a sudden, there has been this visibility, and there have been opposition groups that have taken on, or human rights documentation groups that have basically included gays and lesbians to their long list of violations of human rights in Iran. And some diasporic media groups have basically tapped into the same discourse. Bloggers who have actually in the past have demonstrated that they're extremely homophobic all of a sudden have become gay advocates in reaction to Ahmadinejad's statement. So it's a very reactionary kind of political position rather than a genuine understanding and a genuine questioning of heteronormativity. So rather than, like I said, questioning the way that Iranian national imagination depends on these heteronormative discourses, there has been this this attitude where queers, gays and lesbians, often named as hamjinsgarayan, they have seen as the special groups, these minorities that are pitted on and need rights, right? So there's this kind of patronizing attitude, too, that we are fighting for the rights of the oppressed, being, you know, in this case, Iranian gays and lesbians. This is not to say that basically it is necessarily a bad thing for them to advocate for queer rights, but this kind of sudden shift in attitudes should be contextualized within the discourses of war on terror and how it becomes profitable, actually, now for certain human rights groups that may get funding from the U.S. Department of State for particular propaganda work, one of them which would be, for example, Voice of America. As a queer, I want to have queers be included in Iranian national imaginations and, you know, activist work when it comes to Iranian diaspora and so on and so forth. But it's, like I said, I'm very skeptical of the intentions. And there's no way to know intentions of people, but it's also the outcomes of these kinds of appropriations and how these forms of representations of Iranian queers are used in the larger context of the war on terror, which legitimizes neocolonial agendas and empire-building projects in the name of queer rights or women's rights.
I remember I read in one of your articles about the media and transgender, the case of Nas. I'd like maybe if you can a little bit talk about Nas and how did she end up?
Right. As I said, there has been this, you know, hypervisibility of Iranian queers, including Iranian transgenders, in mainstream media and also in all these films and documentaries that have been produced, mostly outside of Iran, about the condition of queers in Iran. One of the people who was the subject of many of these films was Naz, a transgendered woman who basically appeared in many of these films. And she basically ended up going to Turkey to seek refugee status in a third country of asylum, which was Canada in her case. And it's a very, very difficult process. Queers who live in Turkey or who are seeking asylum in Turkey, of course, Turkey only grants asylum to people of European descent. So Turkey is a country of transit for Iranian refugee seekers who go there, not just queers. And often refugees are sent to these satellite cities, which are border towns, small towns, and queer refugees are often bashed and are subjected to horrific forms of violence. They don't have money. They can't get a work permit. I mean, legally, they are supposed to get a work permit, but it costs money. It takes many years. So they live under really dire conditions. And it takes years for UNHCR to interview them, ask them very personal questions. They have to also register with the Turkish state, and the Turkish police is not very sensitive. So in any case, Naz, after going through all this, finally was able to go to Canada. And in Canada, a charity group that had provided subsidized housing for her, after a year, her term of subsidized housing came to an end, and she was asked to leave. She didn't have money. She didn't have the support system. I heard that she wanted to go back to Iran because she felt isolated. She was alienated in Canada, but she didn't have the means to do so, and unfortunately, she committed suicide. There were several films that she was featured in. One film in particular basically mostly was about her life in Iran and the directors.
Who made this film?
Two diasporic Iranians and one of them, both straight men. And one of them actually applied for refugee status in Canada and got his refugee status because of this film, basically. And he said that the Iranian state had confiscated the footage of his film. And so after Naz killed herself, there were no news about her death anywhere. Her life was very representable, but her death was not nameable. It wasn't mentioned at all. And it is interesting to see when do queer lives become representable and when they become disposable.
I'd like to ask you what you would think the international LGBT people do to support gay and trans rights in Iran, and what is not helpful to do.
I think the kind of alliance building that a lot of queer organizations have been doing globally is the way to go about this issue rather than subscribing to this kind of universal gay identity and then, you know, falling into the civilizational discourses of oppression in Iran and freedom in the U.S. Or in the West in general. I think some of the groups, for example, some of the Israeli radical queer groups are demonstrating how this work can be done without falling or without becoming complicit with the state of Israel's claims of being the only democracy in the Middle East and being queer friendly and at the same time using these claims to legitimize violences against Palestinians. So being aware of these larger politics and also making coalitions across basically national borders. And several people, Jaspierre Poir has written about homonationalisms. Recently, Judith Butler refused to accept a prize in Berlin. And these are ways that people can basically attract attention to ways that queers or gay and lesbian groups can become complicit in with nationalistic discourses or with discourses of liberation. For many people, maybe the concern is not what is written in the laws. Maybe the concerns that are more immediate are things like condoms or having safe sex, you know, because people seem to have a lot of sex, young people, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you claim to save people's lives, maybe you need to think about also providing safe sex tools for young queers in Iran. So the issue is you cannot reduce the issue just to the law and what's written in the law, but the reality of people's lives.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
از مثبت یک تا مثبت 98 با این آهنگ فاصله رو کم میکنم. جنس زن از منه، عشق من بزنه. آهای.